Wine and Crime contains graphic and explicit content which may not be suitable for some listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
You are listening to Wine and Crime, the podcast where three friends chug wine, chat true crime, and unleash their worst Minnesotan accents.
Yeah, sure,
you betcha.
Just push through
their chronic depression.
Crushing it.
To create content.
We're here.
I'm Kenyon.
We are here.
I'm Lucy.
I'm Amanda. My hair is wet. I don't have any makeup on. And if you are a Patreon supporter, you can watch in real time as this pimple grows.
You're stunning.
Charles.
Another Charles. Charles is in charge.
I am breaking out right around where my headphones sit on my face.
Yeah, that's really fun. That's a fun one.
And I just keep cleaning them. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter.
Everything is dust.
Yeah.
I want to get drunk.
So let's hit the road. Let's do it.
Move this pony show along. So we have a very special fan pick for you this week, brought to you by Kelly Thompson.
Oh.
And Kelly's pick is, I'm just going to really love this episode.
Yep.
Kelly's pick is... Daddy crime. Oh, you don't like it when I do it. Funny.
Crimes.
Weird.
Daddy crime. Daddy's been naughty.
I hurt my daddy.
So basically, people who off their sugar daddies is how
or
I
or any kind
it.
Of daddy.
Okay.
Mine's an actual father.
Oh,
father crimes.
Papa, can you hear me? Crimes,
father, but that doesn't play into it really. Mine's a sugar daddy situation.
Great,
excellent,
cool.
I like when we have very different cases. It's awesome.
While we do the wine pairing, I'm going to down this coffee because it's 2:30 p.m. So basically dawn.
Yep.
At the crack of noon.
I got up 45 minutes ago. So
I love it. I love it.
What is our wine crime pairing for daddy crimes?
We're throwing wine out the window today for daddy.
Oh, what a daddy like.
I have paired daddy crimes with Natty Daddy Lager.
Which is
Natty Ice. But with a higher ABV.
Ugh. No.
Yes.
Is it really called Natty Daddy?
Natty Daddy Lager.
How did you find that?
The internet.
Google search.
Internet. And then I got it at Total Wine. And if you're watching at home, because again, you support us on Patreon so you can see these videos, you'll probably ask yourself, wait a minute, Amanda, that doesn't look like a Natty Daddy can in your hand. Because guess what? It's not. Because I tried this beer and it was so foul that I just couldn't do it. But I'm keeping the pairing and I'm just refusing to drink it. Because it's one third my show and I can do whatever the fuck I want.
And the five cans left over will dust over and die in your fridge.
They'll never be touched.
I didn't even bother putting the rest of them in the refrigerator because I did not want to use the energy of like... the fridge to cool these things,
or just like your arms working to put the jewels that it would require.
I think I'm just gonna leave them outside and see who takes them.
That's one option. I think that you should go the other direction and change properties, get a garage, buy an old dirty ass garage fridge off
the beer
of
fridge
Craigslist,
mm-hmm.
and then stock these in the bottom so they become the frozen bottom layer of the beer fridge.
Oh, I like that.
Okay, Daddy's last resort beers.
Daddy's last resort.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll hold on to them then and see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But a little bit about Natty Daddy. Natty Daddy is a lager brewed with the same all-natural ingredients as Natural Light, but with 8% ABV instead of like 5.
That's a lot for a beer.
Where's the payoff?
She ain't bad. She is bad. Bright and straw colored. Aroma has a citrus, hop, and fresh yeast note. The taste is mellow with touches of grainy malty notes.
It's a lot of notes.
Too many notes. Usually I like to say no notes, but this has too many notes.
We're hitting all the wrong notes.
They
wrong
literally notes. Just listed the ingredients of beer and then added the word notes after each.
Incredible.
Citrus, hop, note, yeast,
water note,
grain note, and malt note.
They're only missing water note, water. Which is the main ingredient in beer.
With a slight carbonation note.
They also claim that the bitterness is mild and balanced, and if by a strong urine-type aroma and note you mean balanced, then yes, it certainly is. So I'm going to crack fruit seltzer. And if you do go out and get this pairing, I would love for you to tag me in a photo of you hating it on Instagram.
Oh. Would it be fun for listeners to do like short videos of them doing wine
doing
tastings?
A review. Oh, I love
that. Yeah, from our week wines.
I love that.
And also Natty Daddy.
But also Natty just Daddy. Tag us in it and don't just send us the video, because what are we going to do with that?
Yeah, post it and tag us.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. All right, shall we crack this pairing?
Yeah, I'm about done with my coffee, so I'm going to move on to daytime gin.
Love it. Here we go.
Loves me a good 1:30 glass of wine.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, that was a crack.
Nice crack, everybody.
Nice
daddy crack. Naughty crack.
Speaking of daddy cracks, I was driving the other day and I saw this gentleman, and in fairness, it has been very hot here in Louisville, but this man.
Daddy.
This was daddy.
Curvilicious. And he was shirtless, and he also had his drawers on so low
draws
that it was like triple plumber crack stacked, like plumber crack stacked on plumber crack stacked on plumber crack, to the point where I was like, how do you have any crack left?
That's just a mooning. That's not a crack. That's just a
Was just walking down the sidewalk, getting in his car, had to air all of it out.
He had a really long butt crack. Didn't Jessica have a really long butt crack too?
Did. Her butt crack went to the nape of her neck.
It was like the forearm measurement.
She was proud of that butt crack too. God bless her.
It was as long as Kenyon's vibrator.
Yeah. That is the new American unit of measure, by the way. Kenyon's vibrator.
That's how I'm going to measure my driveway for the paving company.
Yes,
okay,
please do.
15 vibrator length.
15 and a third.
All right. So, Lucy, I'm very interested in what you could have possibly come up with for the background in psych for daddy crimes.
Oh, well, we're going all psych this week.
Ooh.
So for this episode, hold on, I'm going to make this bigger because I'm drinking and it's getting
and
harder.
We're old.
That's what she said.
I'm going to make this bigger because I'm drinking. Okay.
And it's hard to see.
For this episode, I want to talk about a psychological phenomenon. Okay, a psychological phenomenon that gets referenced a lot in a disparaging way, which are daddy issues.
Oh, yeah. God. Misogyny.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Society, men, like to throw out this accusation often.
Mm-hmm.
if a woman doesn't want to have sex, she has daddy issues. If a woman does want to have sex, she has daddy issues. If a woman is seeking commitment, she has daddy issues. If a woman isn't seeking commitment, she has daddy issues. If a woman does or does not have a strong relationship with her parents, she has daddy issues. If a woman does or does not want to date someone of a particular age or sex or demographic, she's got daddy issues. If she does or does not prefer certain things in the bedroom, she has daddy issues. So this has become a catch-all term for literally anything a woman does within the context of sex and relationships. And I've had enough.
And I'm here today to put a stop to it.
And I'm here today to tell you I'm running for president.
God, no. So what are actual quote-unquote daddy issues? According to psychotherapist Amy Rollo, because I'm fucking hungry.
Mm.
Quote, many see this phrase as a way to minimize females' attachment needs. Also, by the way, I'm going to be talking a lot about binary gender here. Mm-hmm. This is just, it's oversimplification. I'm aware of that. That's all I got to say. Children need a dependable adult in their lives to form secure attachments, Rollo explains. If this isn't formed, many people can form avoidant or anxious attachment styles. If a child doesn't have a father figure in their life consistently, this could lead to an insecure attachment style later in adulthood.
But it doesn't necessarily.
No.
That's all I want to fucking say here.
We'll get to you.
Oh my God.
Oh. Mostly bees. We'll get to you.
The second half of Lucy's background in psych, a deep dive into Kenyon's psychosis.
Quick question. Should I eat this peanut that I just found?
Eat it.
In your bra? Where'd you find it?
No, in the chair.
Oh, no.
Your grandmother's antique chair? No.
It might be one of my peanuts.
It might not be.
You're right. It might not be.
Give it to Callie.
Callie.
Wasn't that in storage?
She ate it. She's fine.
She's fine.
Now I want peanuts.
Oh, my God. Okay. She adds that for many people, these attachment styles ultimately present as what some refer to as daddy issues. So this concept dates back to Sigmund Freud and his father complex, which is a term he coined to describe a person who has unconscious impulses and associations as a result of a poor relationship with their father. We also know that Sigmund Freud
is a hack.
Is kind of a lunatic. So
he's the fucking worst. Yeah. I don't understand why he is still such a pillar of like modern psychology.
He turned all of his own issues into like some stages. Kind of theory.
Solidified yeah. stages of development. And it's so frustrating.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to it.
Team Erickson. There.
Okay.
Moving on.
Forever young.
We'll get to young as well. So the father complex is a term he coined to describe a person who has, I already said this, as a result of a poor relationship with their father. On the flip side, we also have the Oedipus complex, the theory that children have a subconscious attraction to their opposite sex parents. So girls being sexually attracted to their fathers and boys being sexually attracted to their mothers. And for the record, Oedipus complex usually refers to boys with their mothers, while Electra complex refers to girls and their fathers.
And for the record, the only father I've ever been attracted to is Lucy's. So God not even damn. My own okay. father. I didn't act
We're moving
on,
on.
It.
You basically acted on it.
I just aired it.
She just floated it publicly in front of 400 people.
And your Fine. Mother. Just because there's and a goalie mother. Doesn't mean I can't score.
I'm going to keep talking.
I'm making myself ill.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also the last time I sent our group chat a really cute picture of my dad on his fishing trip.
Oh, he was so cute.
Amanda He's probably really jerked cute. Off to it.
Hey, what is or isn't in my spank bank is private. It's between me and everyone who follows me on social media.
It's between
okay.
me and the internet.
God
I literally
it.
Helped you make, we crafted a spank bank for our high school boyfriends. Do you remember that?
What?
Amanda, you were in France, I'm pretty sure. Amanda and I had a craft
you
night.
You were moving anyway.
You were. You
had,
already
moved.
You were gone.
We got
dead
like
to us.
Glitter and like stickers, and we decorated little boxes. But like
photos of yourselves. You made like a decorated locker for your nudes that you sent to your
Lisa Frank inspired nudes. We didn't send them. We didn't have phones like that.
We
handed them over in person.
Amanda's boyfriend's box had pictures of both Amanda and I. Ditto with my boyfriend's box. It just had pictures of we made the
and
same
celebrities
box
that they liked.
Celebrities.
They weren't full nudes.
We got some lube.
Yeah.
We sprayed
horny goat weed.
Sprayed Kleenex with our perfume.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure they used that.
It was fun.
Probably. Cleanup is important.
Yeah. I think there were a couple
I'm
Polaroids in there
right now. Thank God I was on another.
You're prude.
It was good. That was the
I am yucking your yum.
That was
right
the season
now.
Amanda and I were popular for
we
like
were so
20
cool
minutes.
We went to 3.5 parties.
Amanda smoked a joint.
Half of a joint.
I felt cool.
It was it was the best week of our lives.
The boy I went to the party to go hang out with called me Lindsay.
I forgot about that.
It was amazing.
Oh my God.
I felt so cool.
Boys are such trash. Good Lord.
Okay.
Oh,
it's so good.
Okay, the Electra complex refers to girls and their fathers. And in Greek mythology, Electra was the daughter of Agamemnon, who was murdered by her mother, whom Electra plotted to kill for revenge.
Mm-hmm.
Like revenge, sexual attraction, whatever. Same thing in
one
Greek
in the
mythology.
Same.
According to a provider from our favorite online therapy company, Talkspace, Dr. Amy Serbus says, quote, "These terms were developed and understood through a psychoanalytic lens where it was believed that young boys were thought to be in sexual competition with their fathers and young girls to be in competition with their mothers. Clearly, this is not an acceptable blanket term anymore." Again, mm-hmm. Freud is gross.
Yep.
Super outdated.
Super outdated.
Never should have been a thing.
Nope.
So let's explore some possible causes of quote-unquote mommy or daddy issues. So a parent who left the family or was mostly absent, a parent who was emotionally or physically abusive, a parent who wasn't loving or nurturing, a parent who, on the flip side, is extremely overbearing, or a parent who treated the other parent badly.
So like trauma.
Yeah.
Surprise.
Right. Yep.
So given these, there are distinct attachment styles, and this is where we can self-assess mostly bees.
Okay.
There are four.
Okay.
Foremost, we have secure attachment styles, which result in from having a caregiver who was responsive to your needs and was emotionally available. So this is like the healthy one.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have anxious, preoccupied. People with this attachment type may be anxious and crave closeness, but feel insecure about their partner leaving them. Then we have dismissive avoidant. People with this type may have trouble trusting others for fear that they'll be hurt. And then we have fearful avoidant. And people with this type may feel unsure about intimacy and tend to run away from experiencing difficult feelings.
I was definitely in the anxious, preoccupied category for a long time.
You do crave closeness, and you are anxious.
And the insecurity about my partner leaving. Latch, mm-hmm. latch. Thanks, mm-hmm. therapy. Mm-hmm. Now I'm much more of a secure attachment style.
Now you can't wait for him to leave.
Now I'm avoidant and dismissive.
But also, like, your dad was an angel on earth, and, mm-hmm. like, obviously, you know, you had other things growing up, but your parents were super solid. They went through a lot together, but they were like an amazing couple.
Yeah, I think that these attachment styles can be formed, and I mean, just from any of the small amount of study that I've done for school, these attachment styles can be formed under a multitude
of reasons.
So like the what your parents, you know, parenting or even their relationship style, like, yeah, that's a factor, but there's a million factors that contribute by the time you are at an age where you're engaging in romantic relationships. So many fucking things happen between, you know, then and then.
Well, as I say later in my notes, there are a million ways to fuck up your children.
100%. Oh, yeah. You just have to assume that you're going to and set money aside for their therapy. You just are. It's part of the job.
Start a trust fund for their therapy. Kenyon?
I feel like I've got a lot of issues, but I feel like I'm pretty good about romantic relationships. Like, I feel like that has not been the main source of my issues in life. Like, I feel like I've been pretty lucky in the relationships that I've had.
You've had even good partners.
The ones that didn't work out were all, like, still good people. There was, like, one asshole in there, but it was very brief. Everybody else, I don't know. I kind of feel like that's not where my shit plays out.
Yeah. And obviously these categories could be expanded upon a lot, but, you know, we have other things to talk about.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on, here are some examples of quote-unquote mommy issues. And I'd also like to point out that, like, men can have issues related to their fathers and women can have issues related to their mothers. So mommy issues aren't always exhibited by men.
No, this is all very broad strokes and only pertaining to a very binary community that we're addressing, leaving out a lot, because this is a show where we get 25 minutes to talk about this stuff.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
So,
and this was just frankly more fun to research than actual information.
This is a Cosmo quiz, take it or leave it.
Right. Mostly bees.
It is. So when it comes to mommy issues, Cerbus explains, quote, generally, this is a man who seems to be seeking a substitute mom as opposed to an equal partner, or behaving as if in reaction to unresolved issues with his mother rather than with the partner. This can lead to relationships having an unequal balance of power between the couple, no shit, whether the man goes to the extreme of being very controlling or in the other direction and becomes very submissive. So,
I've been in these shoes.
My first flash of a thought when I read this was Carol Baskin's current husband.
Oh, yeah. He's so submissive.
Yeah, with, like, the also, leash.
I a little bit stand their relationship. They are bonkers.
It was exhausting. But
they're
I just had a flash of that photo.
Happy.
Yeah. I mean, does it have to be bad, an unequal balance of power between a couple?
If it works out for both parties.
I don't want there to be a complete, I don't want the scale to be like one weight has one side all the way on the floor and the other side up in the air floundering and sad. But as someone who has often, I'd say historically, not been in power in my relationship and been very much like, not necessarily controlled, but like beholden to the needs, thoughts, feelings of my partner without really feeling as though I had the space. And some of that was my own self-confidence and lack of assertion that I just had to learn from becoming an adult. But like, I really like being in a relationship where the power is at minimum equal and where every once in a while it's like, oh, wait, no, I'm in charge of this, because I've so not been in charge other times.
The stable romantic relationships that I idolize are ones where, and again, this is hyper-binary, and these are not the only cases, but are basically like my godparents and Lucy's parents. And the woman wears the fucking pants. I mean, like, they both have independence and they have their own hobbies. And
Actually,
both relationships are, like, really similar.
All the mothers in our friend group were more times than not the pants wearers, for lack of a better term, because that's super fucking misogynistic. But the women were in power.
Ray is throwing up his anti-nausea pill.
Oh, great. Good job, Ray.
Oh my God, I bet my microphone's picking this up. It's kind of gross. Let's move on.
Okay.
Okay. And here are some examples of daddy issues. Women who have an absent father, inconsistent presence, or malfunctioning relationship are at risk for seeking to resolve this through a partnership with a man, says Dr. Serbus. This can cause women to constantly seek validation or approval from men, or seek out people who are emotionally unavailable. And also, like, frequently narcissistic.
I mean, that's just dating in the binary world. Right. Yeah. So, good luck.
Yeah. They might also have a fear of abandonment if their father left their family when they were young, afraid that a partner will leave in the same way that their dad did.
I always thought that I was so lucky because I just grew up without my dad in my life at all.
Right.
So it just, like, wasn't a question. And I think it can be a lot harder for people who have
the relationship and then it's severed.
And exactly.
Yeah. That always would be harder. Or they have
it, but it's tenuous and it's always a question. Like, it was always, you know, like people who are like, well, he didn't send me a birthday card last year. Blah, blah. Right. Mine was like, he just, I don't know if he's alive or dead. Like, it's like not at
yours
all
wasn't
in my...
so much abandonment in that you felt a sense of loss because you never fucking knew him anyway. Good riddance. Right. You
and
just
honestly,
did not know your dad.
Like a blessing. Mm-hmm. You know, like it was just so much easier. It was a lot easier than a lot of like kids who went through divorce.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. For sure. So alternatively, a woman might have lofty expectations and needs. Quote, for women truly struggling with their partners because of their relationship with their fathers, they often struggle with a feeling of rejection. If they felt unloved and rejected by their father, they are at risk for having needs that are unrealistic or difficult for their partner to fulfill. These women might also experience just like constantly trying to find a partner, the inability to remain single and be happy single. Mm-hmm. They might do like really thorough screening of men, like
which I would encourage.
Mm, yeah, just for your own fucking safety.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If you've listened to this show or any true crime podcast in the past,
yeah.
Yeah, but I think this was referring to more to like, oh, let's look through his Instagram to see what kind of car he drives. See if I can see his apartment. Like before you're even, it's like, you know.
That's different.
And finding little reasons why they're not good enough for you or maybe that you're not good enough for them. Just like you can screen too much.
Too much like a checklist attitude instead of a do I genuinely click and get along and enjoy this person.
Right.
Attitude.
Is
and
this
no,
person
like,
kind
yeah, let's just,
to me and safe of a partner? Right.
Let's just give it a try and see how it goes. It's not
right.
on the table. Right. They can have their breakups can be completely catastrophic. Mm-hmm. And then also even when in a relationship, they feel the need to elicit jealousy. So like to maybe flirt with other men, even if they have a partner, just to make sure that their partner knows that they're still, you know, in demand.
I am just too lazy for most of this. I like, this is making me tired to read this list.
I know. None of us have any of these tenets. We're
I
all
just
like, okay.
Yeah. I'm I just want to be at home. With no pants on, I want to not have showered for a week and have my partner deliver me snacks.
I'm in my mid-30s. Mm-hmm. I don't have time or energy or desire for
any of this.
Too tired.
Yeah.
Okay, so clearly fathering and mothering, parenting, it's not uniform. So there is no cut and dried way to explain what type of parenting results in psychological issues.
Yep.
It could be being too attentive or not attentive enough. You could be minimizing or maximizing. Maybe it's abandonment or overprotectiveness. It could be micromanaging or being absent. Like I said before, there are a million ways to fuck up your children.
Yep.
Yeah. And there's also no right way to, like, there
to fuck up your child.
There's a general path. There are general things that are no-nos and things you should try to do. But it's not like there's this tightrope that, like, you know, you have to walk. It's
right.
It's going to be different for every person.
Exactly.
Parent
and it's not
and
like
child.
You can follow an explicit set of steps and have everything go perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not how life works.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look how well Kenyon turned out against all odds.
Yeah. And I mean, but I think a lot of our success, like among our family units, is also that we have always had a pretty hardcore openness of communication and support throughout all the stages of our lifetime, even though when we were kids, that might not have felt that way. But, like, certainly as adults, mm-hmm. you know, we mm-hmm. can have conversations with our families that are challenging mm-hmm. and they don't shy away from it. And even if one person, one side is not necessarily right or wrong, if you can talk it out and be supportive of each other at the end of the day, things are probably going to be okay.
We're all extremely lucky in mm-hmm. the family department.
Yep.
Yeah.
So here's a final thought from our dear friend, Dr. Serbus. Quote, as a mental health provider, I am weary of someone using these terms. They yep. are casually overused, often without a clear understanding of the root cause of what the problem is. And it's too often used to blame and label rather than describe or understand. Final thought.
Nailed it.
And also, folks out there, especially the young, unattached folks who are still dating, don't fuck anyone who says shit like daddy issues. Like, just don't fuck them. Just be
or
like,
do,
oh,
but know that they're
gross.
Probably shitty and you just fuck them and don't call them ever again.
Well,
only
no.
fuck yeah. them if you don't care about them at it's all. Like, you can fuck whoever you want as long as you're safe and it's consenting.
Of course, sure. But I just mean, like, don't positively reinforce shitty douchebag behavior. It's like, don't fuck a guy if he doesn't own a single book. Like, gross. Like, just...
Unless you just want to get railed by a dumbass.
Sure.
Who
well,
cares?
Yeah.
And also, books can be expensive. Maybe he can't afford a book. I'm not going to come maybe, here and tell anybody who or who not to
there's
fuck.
There's a library.
But
maybe he sold all his books to pay off his grandmother's mortgage.
Yeah, you don't know.
You don't
okay.
know.
You don't know what he's been through.
Can we hear a quick word from our fucking sponsors?
How dare you?
Maybe you just want to get railed by a dumbass.
I mean, I've been there.
Hashtag whine and cry.
It's super
college,
easy.
Baby.
Yeah.
I
what's
know.
The
we've
point
all,
of
we've
your
all
late,
been there.
What's the point of your mid to late 20s when you have mm-hmm. no idea what you're doing with your life other than to go out, spend mm-hmm. one molecule of energy to
get
railed
by
a
dumbass
and never have to deal with him ever the fuck again? That is a joy of life that I'm glad I experienced.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. All right.
All right. Word from our sponsor.
Care of is a wellness brand that makes it easy to maintain your health goals with a customized vitamin plan that helps you feel your best today and supports you long term. And Care of has hassle-free vitamins and supplements that are delivered to you. So Care of can make your vitamins and supporting your health goals so attainable because they literally just get delivered to your house in little daily individually wrapped packets that are perfect for getting back into a routine.
Oh,
which seems like
nice.
An insurmountable task.
But Care of really does make that a lot easier. They also offer quality that you can see and taste. Care of is super transparent about the research and sourcing behind every one of their products with extensive information available on their website and fun, informative content on their social media pages. I really like following them on social media.
I know.
It's kind of weird.
It's so good. I love their social media.
Yeah, and their ingredients are just really, really straightforward. So, like, for example, their protein powders are made with wholesome ingredients that you actually recognize. So, like, organic cocoa, pink Himalayan sea salt.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't have questions about that.
No.
Also, health is made easy thanks to Care of's online quiz. We love a good quiz.
So good. It's such a good quiz.
Uh-huh. Care of's in-depth 5-minute online quiz asks you questions about your diet, your lifestyle, health concerns to help you address your specific wellness goals. It is tailored to you.
Yep. And if you're like me and all you really knew were like gummy or Flintstones vitamins, this will completely open your eyes to vitamins and supplements in a way that, like we said before, is super accessible, attainable, and easy to understand. That quiz is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So for 25% off each of your first 3 months of Care of, go to takecareof.com/gals25 and enter code GALS25. That's GALS25. One more time, for 25% off each of your first 3 months of Care of, go to takecareof.com/gals25 and enter code GALS25. Treat yo wellness.
Treat it. There is an entire world of entertainment options out there. Trust me, I've explored them in depth.
Yeah.
I have plumbed the depths of entertainment options.
Correct.
But by that, we mean that there is a lot of compelling international shows that you may be missing out on.
Mm-hmm.
The accents. You cannot afford to miss out on the accents.
The period pieces, the accents. What more could you ask for?
The costumes, the drama.
Ugh.
It is time to burst the domestic TV bubble and check out Acorn TV.
Mm-hmm.
It's our new favorite thing. Acorn TV is a commercial-free streaming service that's rooted in British television. Again,
yep.
The accents. It is home to sophisticated and artful storytelling with top-rated mysteries, addicting dramas, heartfelt comedies, and so much more, including The Yorkshire Vet.
I can't.
My personal favorite.
I called my mom yesterday to check in with her about just, you know, being alive, and I heard, like, all this ruckus in the background, and I was like, what's going on? And she's like, I'm watching The Yorkshire Vet on Acorn TV. And I was like,
I can't be bothered. I will call you back.
I can't be bothered.
On Acorn TV, you can find top-notch performances from TV favorites, including David Tennant.
Love.
So funny. Olivia Colman, Sandra Oh, and Tandy Newton.
Triple love.
Yeah.
And if you can't get enough of suspenseful crime dramas, there's like nothing better than a British crime drama. I just can't. Then catch up on Acorn TV original Mystery Road. Hailed as a visual knockout by the New York Times, Mystery Road takes place in the stunning Australian outback, where a detective and local cop, played by Oscar nominee Judy Davis,
Hello,
team up to investigate the mysterious disappearance of two boys. But solving the case could expose other crimes that haunt the town. Mystery Road returns for a second season in October, opening up a new thriller in a town where desert meets the ocean.
Dynamic.
A compromised archaeological dig and a headless corpse reveal explosive secrets about the town's controversial past. I'm here for this. That is like a Halloween spooky crime drama.
It's also gorgeous.
Yeah. And, you know, if that is not titillating to you, you can always find something new to watch on Acorn TV because it's loaded with thousands of hours of binge-worthy content. And you can stream Acorn TV on all your favorite devices for just $5.99 a month. So if you're not watching Yorkshire Vet, what are you even doing?
What is the point?
What is the point? What have I been working toward? So escape to Britain and beyond without leaving your seat. Try Acorn TV for free for 30 days by going to acorn.tv and use our promo code GALS. That's ACORN.TV code GALS, GALS, to get your first 30 days for free. Treat yo binge.
Oh, treat it.
Are we ready for my case?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Larry McNabney was a successful Las Vegas criminal defense attorney in the 1980s
no
and
comment.
90s. McNabney.
I'm going to go down to McNabney's and get a burger, anybody. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba,
I think
I'm loving it.
It sounds like an old-timey shoe store.
A haberdashery.
I also, so he's a criminal defense attorney. I also saw personal injury lawyer, so I don't know. It's probably both.
Oh, good.
Either and.
Oh, good.
He was well known for his ubiquitous TV ads that featured him riding a horse through the Nevada desert or along the beach, which is precisely the set of skills you desperately need in a criminal defense attorney.
I mean,
horseback riding.
No notes.
But despite his professional success, Larry was notoriously terrible at personal relationships, but mommy issues. By age 46, he had been married and divorced 4 times and had 3 children from these marriages.
And now he's president of the United States.
Mm-hmm. He also struggled with a serious drinking problem and, according to friends and colleagues, seemed to be constantly in a cycle of sobriety and then relapses, which we know is extremely common. And that's nothing to shame a person over, but it probably contributed to his trouble with his marriages.
Oh, yeah. Substance use disorder definitely fucks up your relationships.
Yeah.
Big time. Mm-hmm.
Then Larry met 29-year-old Elisa Barish in 1995 when she showed up at his law office because she had seen the horse ads.
On horseback.
She showed up on horseback.
That'd be amazing.
Practically, though, she just, like, waltzed in one day and was like, hi, I've seen your ads. Give me a job.
I mean.
It was 95. That's how you did it.
Yeah.
Right?
They didn't have monster.com back then.
Oh, now it's like, write 16 cover letters and create a slide deck and we'll never call you back.
Yeah, this God. Is the same as the horse girl from high school sliding into our DMs asking if we have any positions open at Wine and Crime.
Yep.
We're like, it's just the three of us.
I mean, if something happens to one of us, maybe we'll give you a call.
If a miracle happens and we can have, like, employees, then sure.
I mean, Amanda's barely hanging on by a thread, so yeah. We'll be in touch.
I could die.
It takes a lot to maintain Amanda's hair. So if you have experience there.
I already have a guy for that.
Anyway. So Elisa waltzes in, demands a job. Larry took a liking to her right away and hired her as his office manager. And this job included billing clients. Within 6 months, Larry asked her out on a date. She accepted and... soon, according to his friends, Larry was completely obsessed with his new girlfriend.
Don't shit where you eat.
She's like, what, 20 years younger than him?
She's 29. She's 29. He's, yeah, definitely. He has grown children.
Yeah, okay.
So he's got to be twice her age. I don't actually know exactly how old he was at 95. Okay, some friends were suspicious that Larry actually didn't seem to know that much about Elisa or her background and that things were, like, moving pretty fast. She had an 11-year-old daughter named Haley, but other than that, she didn't seem to have any friends or family. She never, like, referenced anybody. She also became evasive when asked about her past. So one person said something like, you'd ask her where she went to high school, and then all of a sudden you'd be talking about skiing. Like, she would just kind of deftly change the subject
good for
away
her.
From
I don't
want to
talk
past.
About your high school either, so.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you.
So, except that's half of this show, but fine.
Precisely why I do not want to talk about her high school.
Yeah.
My other high school. People's high
I'm
school.
I'm tapped out.
Why would I not want to relive my glory days?
But Larry assured his concerned loved ones that he had everything under control and that Elisa was great and that their relationship was great. Because why question
does, like,
him?
Yeah, every man says this like 10 minutes before their whole life falls
He's knifed
apart.
In the back.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry, I have everything under control. It's fine.
Elisa had been working at the office for only about a year when the Nevada State Bar opened an investigation into the firm. And I feel like you have to be pretty shitty for the Nevada State Bar to question your shitty law office.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
They determined that in her short time working there, Elisa had embezzled more than $140,000 from Larry's clients. But rather than taking this as a sign that she was not to be trusted, Larry closed down his Las Vegas practice and moved to Sacramento with Elisa and Haley and made her his fifth wife.
Wow.
Bestowed upon her the honor
yep.
of becoming his fifth wife.
The eternal for the next at least 4 years honor.
I feel like historically wife. Most fifth wives are beheaded at some point.
Oh, no.
Which one was the fifth? The fifth one might have died in childbirth.
Okay, you would
anyway.
Know that. Let's
okay.
move on.
No, that
Nerd
was the
alert.
Third one. Fifth one was beheaded, I think. You're right. Okay. When he left Las Vegas, he lost touch with pretty much all of his friends and former colleagues. Elisa also discouraged Larry from staying in touch with his own now grown children. So, like,
ooh,
she
I
did
like
the isolation tactic, which is...
Yep.
Classic.
Part of, abuse. Mm-hmm. They started this new life in California, and they basically just cut off from everyone from Larry's past, and she didn't have anyone that she stayed in touch with from her past, so they were just starting fresh. This life also included a new hobby that became a passion for Larry, showing quarter horses, which I did not look up, but they are not, I'm pretty sure,
the size of a horse. Yeah. They are not tiny, adorable horses that are no larger than a quarter, and right. I am outraged.
I know what a quarter cow is. I'm afraid what a quarter horse is.
Yeah, are we You're eating this horse?
Cuts of meat.
Meet your meat festival? That sounds fucked up.
It's a meat raffle.
I feel like quarter horse, what are, I don't know, I didn't look them up. Horse also, girl, get at us. Clearly we should have hired you.
But also, torture, don't horror. Though, because I really don't care.
Yeah. Whatever. So.
I'm sorry.
It's a breed of horse.
Great.
That excels at sprinting short distances.
Like a quarter of a mile.
Who cares?
Oh, okay.
And it is a quarter mile or less.
Wow.
They're the sprinters. Reasoning and naming a horse. Nailing it. Yeah, I figured all of it out.
Okay.
Okay. He won numerous awards, and the couple became a fixture on the California horse show circuit.
Wow.
I'm so tired of mediocre circuit. Horse people becoming a fixture. I want to be a fixture.
Larry also started a new law firm with Elisa once again working as his assistant. And he hired a 21-year-old art school student named Sarah Dutra to work as a secretary.
I know where this is going.
You have an office of one lawyer with an assistant and a secretary. Makes perfect sense.
He's hiring a harem.
Both really young women.
Yeah. Sarah and Elisa became fast friends, and Sarah was soon spending pretty much all of her time with the older couple. According to one account, Sarah became, quote, drawn into the glitzy world of horse shows.
Okay.
There are glitzier
worlds. The horse shows that
I've
seen at the state fair, first of all, I don't care how great the costumes are, the whole place still smells like shit. How glitzy could it possibly be?
There are glitzier worlds.
Yeah.
I don't know them. But I know they're out there.
Aim higher, Sarah.
I'm picturing pretty woman when they're like at the horse thing and they're like stepping in the divots.
That's a
glitzy.
Polo.
Yeah.
It involves horses, sure.
But it's not a horse show.
Yeah.
With blue ribbons and a pile of hot dung.
And I guess the derby, I guess horse people, some are pretty fancy, but whatever. It's just glitzy and horse.
But again, there are glitzier worlds.
There are still glitzier worlds.
I like the glitzy world of pontoon shows.
Boat shows.
Boat show. You could drive a boat show through there.
sorry. On September 10th, 2001, Sarah attended one of these horse shows with Elisa and Larry. Larry was showing his quarter horses like usual, but witnesses remember him making some uncharacteristic mistakes during the show. Normally he was like really good and on it, but he like was really off that day. And then after the show, he went straight back to his hotel rather than socializing with anybody. And that was also odd. And he said he didn't feel well and just like got out of there. The next day, which happened to be September 11th, 2001, vendors at the show remember seeing Elisa push Larry off the horse show grounds in a wheelchair. Hmm. It's unclear if Larry was dead or alive at this moment.
Oh, did he die on September 11th?
But it was the last confirmed sighting of him, and it is believed that he died at some point that day.
Wow.
So I'm guessing she wheeled him out, his body out in a wheelchair. He's just not feeling well. Elisa and Sarah had poisoned him with horse tranquilizers.
Oh, to death?
Well, yes.
I mean, sometimes a horse tranquilizer sounds really appealing.
I mean, that's ketamine, basically. Yeah. But too much of it can definitely kill you.
issues sleeping lately, so.
I have had a lot of issues sleeping. I'm basically exhausted all day until midnight, and then I'm up until 5. It's mm-hmm. really great. Okay.
Sounds like you need some ketamine, my friend. Just kidding, don't. It makes you shit yourself. Not that I know firsthand. I don't.
There are glitzier worlds.
There are glitzier worlds.
I am not participating in this conversation.
I've never tried ketamine, but I've seen a friend try it and shit their pants. Kenya knows who I'm talking about.
I do know, and it was not me.
It wasn't her.
Okay. So the two women then spent the day and most of the night driving around Central Valley and Yosemite National Park, or as Trump likes to say, Yosemite National Park.
Anti-Semite National Park.
Yeah, well, that's what he'll rename it when he puts a monument of himself up. Mm-hmm. Looking for a place to bury the body. Finding the ground too rocky everywhere they went, they ultimately just returned back to the McNabney's home and stash the body in the garage refrigerator.
The beer fridge.
With the natty daddy.
With daddy's last resorts.
Yep. Yep. And then they taped it shut with duct tape, which is the ultimate dad fridge.
Sounds like it was mommy's last resort, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that is where the body would stay for months. Meanwhile, Elisa carried on as if nothing had happened.
Oh my God.
She continued to go to horse shows, claiming that Larry was sick or out of town on business. Elisa and Sarah both continued to work at the law firm every day. I don't know
how did they deal with clients with no lawyer? Yeah.
I know. Fielding all of his clients' phone calls, like, where the fuck is Larry?
I don't know.
What if she just, like, started practicing law, pretending to be him?
She probably did. I mean, if, you know, you've been together for a few years and all the cases are pretty similar, you probably
got hard. 2001, they've got email. If she can avoid phone contact, I bet she could respond to emails and letters pretending to be him.
As long as she didn't have to show up in court, yeah.
Yeah.
God.
Fuck. No
this
one.
This is so fucked.
Just wait. No one reported Larry missing until November 30th. He died so he was last seen on September 11th.
Yeah. Wow.
So almost 3 months after his death.
Dang.
The report was made by a newer employee at McNabney's law firm who became suspicious that she had never met her boss and developed a weird feeling about the constantly changing explanations of his whereabouts that were provided by Elisa and Sarah.
Wait, so these ballsy broads, they hired someone.
Maybe they hired a lawyer, actually.
Holy
I'm not
shit.
Sure. That's yeah, a, they fucking
that's
hired.
Amazing.
Damn.
Amazing.
I know.
You know what? An assistant and a secretary to an invisible lawyer, not enough staff.
Yep. I'm like barely mad because that is so bonks.
So bonks. The explanations had started out reasonable enough, but as Larry's absence continued, they became more and more outlandish, with the women claiming that Larry was, one, in a drug rehab in Southern California, two, that he had moved to Costa Rica, and three, that he had joined a cult in Florida.
The Republican Party of Florida.
I feel like the first two...
Reasonable.
Just stick with them.
Yep. Yeah.
Just ride them out.
The rehab one is real good.
Yeah.
That's
a good
cover.
The second
you
bring cults into this.
Yeah, it gets a little suspicious. A
little QAnon-y, you know?
Yeah.
But shockingly, it seems that the first missing persons report by this new employee at the end of November didn't get much attention from law enforcement. They basically were just like, he's a grown man. He can disappear if he wants to.
Yeah.
Nothing to see here.
It's actually really not shocking.
Yeah. Finally, a second report was filed in January by McNabney's adult son. Who, although he didn't get to see his dad often, did become suspicious when he couldn't even talk to him on the phone.
Yeah, no phone call. Now the holidays have passed.
Yes.
We've had no contact over Christmas or New Year.
So Elisa thought about Christmas, and actually she had like a kind of ingenious thing. I mean, it didn't work out ultimately, but like A for effort. Elisa had even gone so far in her cover-up as to plan a surprise party for Larry's birthday in December, inviting his kids and their families, and then calling everyone the day before to cancel because Larry had to go out of town on business.
I don't know. I feel like I'd show up anyway and be like, prove it.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you already had suspicions, sure, but if you didn't already have suspicions...
Yeah, no, that's... You're right.
You know, it could buy some extra time.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly it did.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, his son reported in January, but yeah, maybe it bought an extra week or two. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It doesn't sound like she used that time wisely, leaving the fucking body in the goddamn fridge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever. The son's report led to the Sacramento police trying to contact Elisa to set up an interview. In amazingly cliche fashion, she ignored their calls and fled the state in a red Jaguar.
With a scarf around her neck and glasses on her face.
Heading towards the Grand Canyon.
Yeah. Heading towards the border.
Yeah.
Along with daughter Haley, who is now 17, and it's unclear how much Haley knew of her mother's crimes. She was a child. She claimed to have great affection for her stepdad. Mm-hmm. I don't think she was involved. Maybe
I mean,
she
whatever. The responsibility is on the Elisa. Adult.
Yeah, exactly.
Although that duct-taped fridge in the basement for 6 months is a little...
In the garage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Still a is, child. Like,
she's still a child.
If my mother... If the fridge was broken and my mom had duct taped it and I didn't know what the fuck was in there, I would have no reason not to believe whatever she told me about the fridge.
Well, your mom
but also
is not
my
Elisa, dad,
my
but
stepfather
at the same time,
wouldn't be
like,
missing for a bunch of months. And
it's
I don't
not,
know.
She's a child. Like, it's not her responsibility. You know what I mean? Elisa also fled with at least $500,000 that she had acquired in the past months by selling all of Larry's possessions, emptying his various bank accounts, and forging checks at the law firm. So she just was, like, using every minute of that time to just amass as much money as she could.
Hit him up, Styles.
While she had been working on amassing this money and dodging questions about Larry's whereabouts, Elisa also took measures to change her appearance. She went on an extreme diet, losing, I read over 30 pounds, but then I also read that she went from a size 10 to a size 3, so I feel like that might even be more.
But also, like, binary women sizing is completely off the fucking rails, so that could still, she could have lost 30 pounds and that could still very much be true.
On the same day, I can be a 6 or a 12.
Yep.
In different clothing.
I fluctuate between a 6 and a 13.
It's insane.
It makes no sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's great. It's really fun.
It's really nice.
And
don't
your self-esteem.
And let's not even get started on just, like, large and extra large and whatever. Like, it's getting even crazier lately, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I ordered... Whatever, I can't get into it. Okay. So, she also dyed her hair blonde. She was normally a brunette. And began working on altering her voice, like Elizabeth Holmes style.
Oh, yes.
Like, deeper?
I'm here for
I don't
this.
Know if she went I'm deeper, but she this. Was, like, trying to change her voice.
It's Gina.
According to some of Elisa's horse show acquaintances, she started looking and acting eerily like Sarah.
No.
Ooh, did
oh,
she
yeah,
kill
I was
Sarah?
Just going to say, like, where is Sarah?
Sarah where fled around Sarah? The same time as Elisa in her new red BMW.
What is Ladies, with these gals and their red cars?
Mm-hmm.
How about, like, a Chevy Malibu?
How about just, like, a gray Passat?
Under the radar. Yep. No one's
really
going to care
nice,
about a Prius.
Smooth drive.
Yep.
Okay. On February 5th, a farm worker found Larry's body in a shallow grave. So shallow, in fact, that one leg was sticking out of the ground.
Okay, girls.
These women really did not like to dig.
No.
No.
I mean, it's sweaty work. I don't like it either.
They dug themselves a hole.
They sure did.
So this
they
is
fucked
a-
this one up big time.
This was in a vineyard near the McNabney's home. At first, police thought that Elisa may have also been a victim since they had not been able to get in touch with her.
Oh, yeah.
But when they searched the McNabney property, they found a horse trailer stuffed full of Elisa's belongings that made them realize something much more complicated was going on.
So did, like, she think she was going to be able to circle back and, like, pick up the trailer and take all of her shit back?
It had been months. Yeah, at this point, it's weird. Mid-January, and why even pack all your September. Shit?
Yeah.
So she might have, I mean, you know.
Why pack your shit all in that trailer? It. Yeah, I guess.
She's also obviously not that smart, so who the fuck knows what she was trying to do.
That's true. In the trailer were old documents that indicated that Elisa had several aliases and had been using a false name since she had first walked into Larry's office 6 years ago.
So she's not even Elisa?
She's a lion.
Elisa Barish had actually been the name of this woman's former cellmate in Florida.
Yes!
It didn't take them long to figure out who Elisa really was, an ex-convict whose real name was Laren Renee Sims.
Damn!
And I think it's pronounced Laren. It's spelled Laren. Maybe there's
it might be Laren.
I don't think it's Laren. Laren.
Maybe.
I'm going to call her L.
Just call her Sims.
Sims.
We could just keep calling her Elisa.
Yeah. So this bitch was from Massachusetts, but had moved to Florida with her parents as a teenager. She was a cheerleader and an excellent student, but dropped out of high school and was arrested for theft several times before she turned 18.
I mean, this is what happens when you move to Florida. What did you expect?
She also had two children with two different fathers while she was still a teenager. So Haley was the daughter who you guys know about, but she also had a son named Cole, but there is no information about him available online. And he,
other than that, he may or may not have dated our friend in high school.
Oh my God. That'd be amazing.
We can't know that it didn't happen.
Well, he'd be like 12 years older than he should
did
be.
You see that guy?
Yeah, he did kind of look. It could be.
He looked a little old for his age.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that Cole stayed with the father, because he was not in Las Vegas at that point when she met Larry.
He was in Minnesota.
She had a rap sheet of fraud, forgery, and theft charges that was over 100 pages long.
Oh! Whoa! Does that mean her first murder?
Does that imply 100 incidents?
Probably not. Probably more than that. Because it's a list.
You know, yeah, a lot.
Those sheets are usually pretty bulleted without a ton of, like, detail, and then you have to go deeper into the files.
Yeah. I've
never seen an actual rap sheet, I guess.
Yeah. She is known to have used at least 38 different aliases and numerous social security numbers, so at least 38 different fraud cases. Minimum.
That's great. That's so many. Mm-hmm. That's more names than I have.
Yes.
So police began a massive hunt for Elisa / Laren, Laren, whatever.
Yeah.
She had made it to a small town in the Florida Panhandle, which is actually where she should be.
All the shit runs to the Florida Panhandle.
In her red Jaguar.
Gators are past.
Gators are past.
Where she quickly found a couple part-time jobs, waiting tables at an upscale restaurant, and doing clerical work in a law office.
Girl. I mean, use your skills. Mm-hmm. She's got a lot of experience.
What were her references?
She also went on a few dates, including a date to a Kid Rock concert.
No.
Classic.
At the RNC.
Scott Baio opened.
God. The bat that gave everyone COVID. Scott Baio. Kid Rock.
That racist couple.
Yep.
What? Her name is actually lineup. Karen.
No.
She also went on a date with a 48-year-old divorced daddy named Robert Murphy.
She's getting her next mark.
One night in March 2002, she spent the night at Robert's and snuck off early in the morning, stealing $600 in cash and his pickup.
That sounds like a country
song. She already has a Jaguar. Why do you need his fucking pickup truck?
She left him the keys to the Jaguar, which he drove to work.
He drove it to work the next day?
He was like, okay. It's clearly an upgrade.
I'm
not going to ask questions.
I have no notes. I guess, like, the car fairy visited and took his shitty pickup and left him a Jaguar, and he's just not going to question it.
What I don't know,
and
I don't
only cost me $600, I mean, I'll take it.
It didn't take long, however, for police to find the car and question Robert.
And he's like,
like, what the fuck?
Oh.
This is so stupid.
I know. They then searched the
town. I probably would have done the same thing.
And found Elisa Lauren at a swimming pool of a condo complex near Robert's home. And this is probably where she'd been living with Haley. So she's just chilling at the pool. Again, so cliche and so amazing.
She's reading a book with her sunglasses and her red one-piece bathing suit.
Yeah.
And then the shadows of the agents come at her and she looks up and she just goes, hello, officer.
Yeah, exactly.
Took you long enough.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. She turned herself in willingly. She didn't turn herself in. She was fucking caught, but yeah. It's fine. Telling police, I'm the one you're looking for.
What a drama queen.
Once in police custody, she came clean about everything, writing a 3-page confession that implicated Sarah in the poisoning plot. And included the detail that she had chosen to bury Larry in a vineyard because, quote, he always liked wine.
Well.
What?
I better secure my burial plot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jesus. I wonder what he helped fertilize.
Mm. A few days later, she. Oh, sorry. I forgot. This part is sad. Changing tone. A few days later.
Come on.
Oh, Jesus.
She hanged herself in her cell at the Hernando County Jail, and she left a suicide note that suggested the money she had stolen be put in a trust for her children.
No, that's
bitch, you stole it.
How yeah, that works. It's not your money.
That's not how that works.
Yeah. And instructed her lawyer to sue the jail for failing to prevent her death.
Oh, she is a fucking pill, isn't she?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I appreciate what she's trying to do because obviously the prison system is horrific. But you kind of can't run away from the police with a 100-page rap sheet for fraud and then use your suicide to like
benefit your kids.
To like get to so yeah I don't know, it just it's not great.
It's like she tried to get like one last posthumous
to like
scam
defraud the prison. Which like fuck the prison system, scam it all you want, but
she also was in prison for like 3 days.
Right.
Woof. Sarah Dutra was tracked down and arrested and initially charged with capital murder. She was ultimately convicted of voluntary manslaughter and being an accessory to murder.
Sure.
Which I feel like maybe there was some sort of deal in there.
Yeah. And I mean, most likely, especially given Laura's or Lauren's or whatever her name is, history, taking this to court with Sarah, they probably had to adjust those charges because they didn't think a jury would convict at what they wanted to try her for.
And Elisa / Lauren, whatever, was the one seen pushing him in the wheelchair.
Yeah.
So I feel like they just knew Sarah was involved.
Yeah, but not
they
like
didn't have like enough actual evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Still, she was sentenced to 11 years in prison and was recently released on parole.
You know what?
So there
Save
you go.
A horse, ride a cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
Save a quarter horse.
Ride a daddy. Kill your
ride
husband.
A daddy. Wow.
So that is my case.
Nice
what
job.
What a whirlwind, honey.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Yippee-ki-yay, McNabney.
Yep. Well done. Well, shall we take a moment to hear a word from our sponsors?
Let's.
Get fresh, pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door with HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. HelloFresh lets you skip those trips to the grocery store and makes home cooking easy, fun, and affordable.
But, like, especially fun. HelloFresh has become, like, a new favorite activity of mine, cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Who would have thought?
I don't cook, but I can cook a HelloFresh meal.
Save time, money, and stress effortlessly. HelloFresh offers convenient delivery right to your doorstep for easy home cooking with the family. Mm-hmm. The recipes are easy to follow and quick to make with simple steps and pictures to guide you along the way. Pictures, people!
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the best.
So not only do you save time and, frankly, stress by going to the grocery store, but these recipes are quick. You can get dinner on the table in about 30 minutes or less, which is like two glasses of wine.
You can even choose quick meals from their selection. Like if you don't, you can have, they have a selection that's like a wide range of skill sets. All of them are very simple, but there are some that take a little bit longer, and then you can choose from like their quick, like 30 minute meals. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. So in that vein, there is delicious and nutritious variety, again, delivered to your door. Mm-hmm. So you can choose from like low calorie, vegetarian, kid friendly recipes. And HelloFresh delivers fresh, high quality, pre-portioned ingredients. I cannot express enough how much that saves my sanity, because I absolutely hate it.
It limits food waste too, which is amazing. You're not buying extra that you don't need and then throwing it out because you don't know how to use it.
And like, has anyone ever used a full container of basil?
No.
Before it goes bad?
No.
No. No. Yeah. HelloFresh is also flexible for your lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So you can keep your fridge stocked by adding extra proteins or sides like garlic bread to your weekly order. I love garlic bread. So tonight I am planning on making the balsamic tomato parmesan risotto.
Mm.
Are you kidding me?
I can't.
Basil oil and zucchini. It's just like beautiful roasted vegetables. It's perfect for like late summer. You can use up those tomatoes.
Yes.
With a gorgeous risotto. And now I like know how to cook risotto. And I can be confident with that.
Yeah, it's teaching you as you go. And then you can use those skills on other variations of the recipes. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So go to HelloFresh.com/80gals and use code 80gals, that's 80GALS, to get a total of $80 off your first month, including free shipping on your first box. Additional restrictions apply, and please visit HelloFresh.com for more details. One more time, go to HelloFresh.com/80gals and use code 80gals to get a total of $80 off your first month, including free shipping on your first box. Additional restrictions apply. Please visit HelloFresh.com for more details and treat your meals.
Treat them. There is nothing worse than an ill-fitting bra.
Yep.
I mean, there are worse things, but that's pretty far up there, especially when you're like obligated to wear a bra all day because of society.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But Third Love does.
Zoom meetings.
Seriously. You might have to wear pants, but you have to wear a bra.
You should probably wear your bra.
Third Love does bras differently. They believe that every person with boobs deserves to feel comfortable and confident every day. And with the right kind of support, Third Love's can help you do this.
They're going to make it happen for you. And how they do it is awesome, because they have this Fit Finder quiz. You know we love a good quiz. Where you simply answer a few simple questions to find your perfect fit in about 60 seconds. So over 15 million people have taken the quiz to date, and it's actually fun, can confirm. Takes less than a minute to complete, and your breast shape matters when finding a good fit, which is something that I really did not consider.
I didn't even think about it. I was educated by this quiz. Be like, oh my gosh, there's so many different shapes of boobs.
Exactly. So Third Love helps you identify your breast size and shape and helps you find styles that fit your body. So I was dealing with a lot of like spillage over the top of a cup and getting that like double boob ridge.
Yep.
And Third Love helped me discover that the type of bra that works best for me has sort of like either a cotton or a lace overlay up the top.
Those lace overlays are so cute.
So that it just like gives you all that support and like great cleavage, but then there's no rigid line for the breast to spilleth over.
Yeah, the cup won't runneth over.
Exactly. And it's phenomenal. And the comfort and the quality. I mean, I can't. This is hands down the most comfortable bra that you will own. The straps don't slip. They have tagless labels, so there's no itching. And they have these lightweight, super thin memory foam cups that mold to your shape. So you are not like reinventing the wheel here. The bra fits to you, not the other way around.
That's very important.
It's revolutionary.
It truly is. So Third Love knows that there is a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they are offering our listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/gals to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/gals for 15% off today. Treat your boobies.
Treat them. So, my case, this story has so many, like, socialite twists and turns that I had to cut out. So, I recommend that anyone listening checks out the full Vanity Fair article about this case because it's really thorough and we just don't have time to go down, like, every socialite connection rabbit hole with this case. So, go read the article. But I'll give you the gist. So, Thomas was born into the most luxurious of laps. The son of an investment banker, Thomas Sr., and a debutante named Shelley. He was raised in what his father, Thomas Sr., referred to as a small mansion in Tuxedo Park, New York.
we're comfortable.
Yeah, upper so
is
middle
is a small
class.
Mansion a manor?
Probably. Yeah. Sure.
Tuxedo right. Park.
Yeah. I think a haunted mansion is a manor, but yes.
I'm looking up Tuxedo Park.
A small mansion in Tuxedo Park is like the most nouveau riche sentence ever.
It's pretty bad. So he attended elite grad schools Buckley and Deerfield, a grade school, excuse me, Buckley and Deerfield Academy before being accepted to Princeton, where he majored in economics, where he majored in tracking rich people to how they got rich. Vanity Fair writes, quote, he was a strapping 6'3", gym-bodied and catalog model handsome, with a man-bun-worthy sweep of blonde hair and piercing blue eyes. Anyone glancing
man.
At no Never. Seriously, anyone glancing at the galleries of Black Tie Society pictures online would have seen a dashing man about town, seemingly at ease among his fellow swells. But money can't buy life skills. In fact, many could argue it can stunt life skills.
Money also can't buy you class.
No, money
According
can't
to
buy you. Countess Luann de Lesseps.
I'm continuing my Luann coloring sheet.
It's so
We
good.
Basically can't see you whenever you move because you have your background on, so it looks like you're in like
very confusing.
Kind of
there she is. Sort I of. Love her. I want to frame that when fine. You're done. When Tommy graduated from Princeton, he didn't know what to do with his life. He scraped by on his meager $600 a week allowance and $2,400 rent a month rent that was paid by his father, while lying to everyone that he was friends with to save face, pretending he was getting his money in day trading, and had aspirations of starting his own hedge fund and following his father's example. Mm-hmm. In reality, he had failed the Chartered Financial Analysis Level 2 exam, two times, and just wasn't cut out for this business. Mm. On top of his failed career aspirations, he was known to be a bit of an oddball, which I can appreciate. A family friend remarked that he seemed, quote, a little bit off. He just had a blank stare and was never animated. He'd almost sound scripted, which made me think maybe he was on a mood leveler.
Oh, now, maybe he had killed someone.
Yeah. Well, I'm no stranger to, like, social awkwardness, and so I take this with a grain of salt because, like, hobnobbing with the social elite would be fucking hard, and they're probably quick to pass judgment on, you know, anyone who doesn't fit the bill. But I also don't feel bad for this douchebag at all, and his behavior escalated into violence toward, like, the only friend that he had.
Well, it sounds like either he's a sociopath or he's on a mood leveler, which is extremely common, especially
right.
among fucking rich wasps.
For sure.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Anything is possible.
I'm on a mood leveler.
Duh.
That's different.
So one of these friends who he met in the Hamptons was a wealthy hippie named Peter Smith. We also went to high school with someone named Peter Smith, but
not,
different Peter
not
Smith.
A wealthy
not the
hippie.
Same. not the same guy.
So after a summer of friendship, the two attended a New York City movie premiere for a short film that a mutual friend had made. Out of nowhere, after the film, Tommy allegedly jumped Peter, slamming his head against the sidewalk pavement several times, leaving him with a broken nose and a concussion. And what? When asked why, he merely stated, quote, "Peter's crazy. You don't understand."
So he fucking
just jumped him out of nowhere,
I guess. But like whatever it's called to smash a head against pavement.
Yeah, jumped him out of nowhere.
Jesus.
Peter was rightfully granted an order of protection against Tommy, and the two are obvi no longer friends. Even after Tommy allegedly reached out to Peter asking, quote, "Hey, buddy, why can't we be friends? Friends fight." Yeah.
Can you imagine
friends
if I would have
beat the shit out of you?
You almost killed me.
Can you imagine if I would have grabbed one of you and just thrown you to the ground and beat your head against the sidewalk, then been like, what? Friends
hey,
fight.
Friends fight.
Honestly, yeah. We'd probably still be friends if you only did it once.
I love you too. Thank you.
More than
thank
you get
God
one.
I'm on a mood stabilizer.
You get one. So
touring can be rough.
It can. If people keep asking me if we're gonna start going on tour in my camper, and I'm like, it's 13 feet. We'd murder each other.
We'd never make it.
It wouldn't be enough space for myself. Just me.
Yeah. That's why you take it camping.
Who asked you that?
Oh, just like random people on Instagram have been like, is this the new Wine and Crime tour camper? And I'm like,
fuck no.
No. We get separate hotel rooms because we don't even want to share a bed anymore. A bedroom.
Ladies need their separation sometimes. Okay.
Yeah.
Need although it's been so space. Long that we've toured that I would just gladly share a one-room Airbnb at this point to be able to do anything.
One night.
Yeah,
at
for one
first
night.
We
then
were fine
it.
With it, but it's after weeks.
Yeah.
That need my space.
It's a lot. So when Peter Smith's family house in the Hamptons later burned to the ground, Tommy was an immediate suspect but was never charged.
Oh, shit.
Williamsburg SPCA also turned up at poor Peter's house, responding to reports that he was abusing his dog, which turned out to be completely false. And it was obvious to Peter and his friends that Tommy had made the call to the SPCA.
So he's like doxing his one and only friend who he
pretty
already
much
beat the shit out of and
burned
his
their
house
down.
Why is he so? I thought he was on pills. Good ones.
Not enough, apparently. Oh. A mutual friend stated that, quote, Peter confronted Tommy's dad and said, you've got to figure out your fucking son because he's a crazy person, which, I mean, kind of fair. It was always, Tommy's Tommy, what are you going to do? Ha 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 ha.
Tommy's an arsonist.
Yeah, what boys will be boys.
Yeah.
But I think in private, he says, Peter says, but I think in private he really gave it to Tommy. Like, Tom Sr. was like,
just stop burning people's homes down.
Yeah.
That's so, not enough.
It's not enough, but, you know,
I'm
you
coping
try.
With more lipstick. Continue.
I love that.
I'm coping with more wine.
So, concerned that their son was going nowhere fast and freaking out a bit over his unsettling behavior, obviously, Thomas Sr. and Shelley decided to try some tough love. Their son's lavish spending on things like Hamptons getaways, memberships to elite sports clubs, and other all-around frivolous bullshit.
When you said tough love, I heard you say Tufts love. Like some Tufts love. They sent him to Tufts.
Yeah. They sent him to Tufts. It was really hard. It was really difficult.
Brutal.
Well, they cut him off, basically. Okay. So they ended this funding all of this shit.
Mm-hmm.
So on January 4th, 2015, Tommy goes to his parents.
Recent.
Yeah, it's not long ago.
I was
ago.
Picturing, like, you probably said the date earlier, but in my head, I was picturing, like, it was the 60s.
I don't know if I did say the date earlier, and Peter was described as a hippie, so I could see where you made that connection.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, this was in the mid-teens.
Like, this was recent. Interesting. Yeah.
So Tommy goes to his parents' loft in Manhattan on January 4th, 2015, to chat with his father. He sends his mother to literally go get him a fucking sandwich, like at a bodega. I, like, hate him so much. But anyway.
Woman, get me a sandwich.
Yeah. While she was gone, neighbors reported to police that they heard a gunshot.
Oh, no.
When Shelley returned with Tommy's goddamn motherfucking sandwich, she found her husband, quote, in their bedroom on his back between the bed and the wall near the windows, dead with a single bullet hole in his head and his hand clasping around a 40-caliber Glock pistol on his chest. So he was, like, laying there with a gun laying on his chest. In his hand. Yep.
The dad.
The dad. Yeah. Police were not fooled by this, like, real dumb attempt at a suicide staging and immediately went to look for Tommy Jr., the son. When they
how did police know to suspect Tommy?
The mother called, and Tommy would have been the last person seen with his dad. I think.
And he was gone.
And he was Tommy gone at this point. Yeah, so I'm sure the mom, Shelley, was like, I don't know, I left my son and him here. They were both alive. I went to get him a sandwich. When I get back, and he's Tommy's dead and gone. Tommy's gone.
He might have that, like, He might also have had a police report from the SPCA visit, too. Oh,
probably. There's any number of things that could be on record.
But not arrested.
Yeah.
Okay. And the assault against Peter.
Yep.
Right.
So he's not new to the system in that sense, but certainly didn't see fucking jail time because he's rich and white. Mm-hmm. So when they confronted him in his apartment that night, they found hollow point bullets, a red dot laser gun sight, handcuffs, and a credit card skimming device, along with 21 blank white credit cards. So he clearly had a plan in the works to, like,
get away,
take an identity, you know, make all these cards linked to probably his father's account and get away. Tommy was arrested and charged with second-degree murder. In court, the prosecution painted a picture of, quote, the daddy murderer, which is why I picked this case, obviously. That's what he was, like, referred to in the papers. But an
interesting twist.
Yeah.
A father murderer.
Yeah. A privileged
twist in that it's literal.
Daddy crime. A privileged socialite suffering from failure to launch who didn't like his daddy cutting his weekly allowance down to a piddly $300 a week.
Oh my God.
So they didn't even cut him off entirely. They cut it in half and then stopped funding, like, him going to all of these country clubs, basically.
To Ibiza.
Yeah. So it was also revealed in court that Tommy was apparently diagnosed with several serious mental health conditions, including obsessive compulsive disorder, depression, and schizophrenia, and his parents sought help from doctors who prescribed him medication that he refused to take. And I know we've talked about this a lot. Mental health is not your fault, but it is your responsibility to treat. Nobody can treat, you know, that stuff for you. You have to do it, or you could be a harm to yourself.
Mm-hmm. And others.
And in this case, others, which is usually quite rare when it comes to mental illness. So it was no family secret that Tommy had issues. The recorded 911 call that Shelley made to police. Okay, so this might answer your question, Kenyon. After finding her dead husband and her referring to Tommy Jr. as, quote, my son who is nuts, which, like, okay.
Sorry, oh,
real
God.
Sensitive. Real sensitive, Shelley.
I almost spit out my wine.
When asked on the phone who shot her husband. So she did, she, like, knew immediately it was her son.
Right.
My co-hosts who are nuts.
Who are nuts. So the defense leaned hard into an insanity plea, but the jury was not buying it. One juror, Julie Thierry Cuvillon, or Cuvillion, who was interviewed after the fact, stated that Tommy sending his mother out on an errand was the hole in the insanity plea that turned the whole thing. Quote, it was the can of Coke. Oh, he wanted a can of Coke and a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
And also the fact that she offered to make him something there when he said, I'd like you to go out.
Uh-huh.
It let us know that he knew what he was doing.
Also, the, like, credit card skimming machine and all the, like, paraphernalia.
He had an exit plan.
Yeah.
And I also just added, regarding the can of Coke, this was an item that his parents never had in their home. So the theory is that he, knew. Like, asked for it knowing that she would have to leave the apartment to go get it.
Mm-hmm.
So when the prosecution...
When you said the can of Coke, I thought that was, like, allegorical for the... who is that? Was it Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill? Didn't he put pubes on her Coke or something
I don't know. I'm not familiar with that.
For, like, retribution?
Detail.
No, that was part of the accusation. Wasn't it Clarence Thomas?
I don't know.
Well, Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill, yeah, but I haven't heard that.
I don't know that detail.
I think he put his pubes on a can of Coke. So I thought that was, like, a throwback to that.
Right. No, this was like an actual. Okay. Oh yeah, no, this is like an Supreme actual Court. Can of goat. Yeah.
Uh huh.
So the time the quote continues. The timing shows irrationality. It disproves his insanity defense. The prosecutor said, "A truly insane person kills for no reason at all. They strike seemingly at random times and places, and that's not the case here." I mean, I don't know if I fully agree with that. I think that to put a blanket statement out there that's like an insane person kills for no reason at all is a wide stroke, but I understand what they're trying to say here, that like there's so much premeditation and so much calculation that this wasn't like he lost control of himself in the moment due to
or
a symptom of his mental illness.
Or he didn't understand the world around him in the moment and like what reality was. Yeah.
He knew what the process would be and what he was doing and then what the outcome would be.
Right.
So Tommy was found guilty. He was sentenced 30 years to life, and he is still very much in jail because obviously this just happened like 5 years ago.
But is wild.
Isn't it bizarre?
I'm happy that Peter Smith now can live free of this
quietly.
Harassment.
Yeah, seriously. Ugh. But yeah, I just thought this case was so odd. The socialite, the daddy killer.
The
and
daddy
that's how it popped
murder.
Up in like the tabloids and, you know, gotta love the New York Post or whatever.
Also a kid who, I mean, obviously mental health issues not his fault and extremely serious and can completely derail one's life.
Mm-hmm.
But he just had everything, like he started out with everything.
A silver spoon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is how it ended. That's
like, but I mean there's something to be said for like if you are raised among extraordinary wealth without really any transferable skills, and then you're used to, and I am absolutely not defending what this guy did, but if you are used to a certain way of life and then that way of life is rapidly removed,
or you aren't capable of accessing it in the way that you've been told is how you
access it. Then it certainly doesn't boggle my mind that his thought process would be, well, I got to kill my dad and like mimic all of his credit card numbers and then just like go on the run.
Well, it's an easy way out, basically. An easy way to a life that you feel entitled to.
Yep.
It's also just it's logical without a single ounce of humanity or empathy or emotion, which I feel like is a common thing to surface with people who have mental illness and also people who act out violently. It's like, it's not that it's illogical in a lot of cases. It's just that there's
so
no humanity to it.
Point A to point B.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
It's
right.
So cold.
Yeah, we're like the regard for human life doesn't take enough of a hold on you to go, wait, maybe I shouldn't kill someone for this?
Shouldn't kill my father and let my mother be traumatized forever by walking in on it?
Yeah,
some American Psycho shit.
Yeah, it's a little wild. So that is my case.
Nice job.
Well, well done.
How fun.
And we got through this episode without too much daddy voice.
Really none, it's except
not
for
over yet.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I can't do it. Somebody else do special thanks this week in daddy voice. I refuse.
Special thanks to Kelly Thompson, who's our new daddy. We had so much fun doing this game.
And if you want to support our lifestyles, you can. Our glamorous lifestyle.
God,
there are glitzier worlds.
You can join Patreon, support us on Patreon, $1 a month on up. You have full access to all of our bonus content, which now is going to include mega special thanks lists as well
and
as
video.
Monthly mega lists.
Monthly mega lists for special thanks, super drunk. Also video episodes, also Spooky Little Bitch, also coming up a mansplaining.
It's coming so soon.
Drunk Guys.
I know that I've been saying that forever, but it's been a struggle. But it's coming so soon.
Content. Lots of content on Patreon. Join.
Yes, 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 yes.
Yep,
all right.
Yep, yep, yep. All right. See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Wine and Crime. Our cover art is by Kala Yip. Music by Phil Young and Corey Wendell. Editing by Jonathan Camp. Check out our website and blog at wineandcrimepodcast.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Wine and Crime Pod. If you have questions, answers, or recommendations to share, email us at wineandcrimepodcast@gmail.com. Episodes are available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, basically wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And if you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. It is the best way to spread the word. If you'd like to show your support and get a shout out on air, visit our Patreon page to keep this podcast and the wine flowing. Cheers!
Tales over ales.
What's brewing?
Join us every week for our Power Hour podcast, where we tackle life while getting buzzed with your hosts,
Jill.
What about like a Red Rover, Red Rover?
Did I ever get locked in?
No,
I broke through that shit like this one. Actually, I started running. They were just like, go. Just go through.
Michaela.
When we first started talking about this podcast, we were going to put in a game that was guess Michaela's accent because the three of us never know.
Damn it. Yeah. Why? Why is that a thing?
Because it's different all the time.
You say things weird sometimes. Sometimes you're British. Sometimes you're a pirate. Sometimes
Florida. Anthony.
You know, for somebody who makes shit up, a lot of the time you try not to get too specific. But he'll be like, 37.9% of people. And I'm like, what?
60% of the time, it's right.
No.
All the
See?
Time.
Jess.
She's the nosiest person ever. She goes,
do you use, like, the glass cup on the wall?
I told her one time she was against her, in Vegas, she was against the apartment door, listening. I'm like, it's like, we were, it's like, around dinner time. We want to eat. Hand me a rib.
Follow us on Facebook and Instagram and listen to us anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Oi!